here we go. It's the podcast for the universe. We call it the podcast for the universe. I'm sure that there's other podcasts out there that are for the universe, but this is our podcast for the universe. It's the Energy is Love podcast. Obviously, I don't know why I have to mention that or why I choose to say that each and every episode, but just in case you guys forget, I also mentioned where you can find all of our episodes, which is energyislovepodcast.com. There you will also find all the links to our sponsors, as well as all the links to social media and every place that you can listen to the podcast, which is pretty much anywhere and everywhere. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the podcast. Thank you for sharing, doing all those wonderful, 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 great things. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by As Above, So Below. As Above, So Below has been sponsoring the podcast for quite some time, and they are a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful shop up in Roy, Utah. At As Above, So Below, you can find pretty much anything and everything that you could possibly imagine, need, desire, or want for your spiritual journey and growth. At As Above, So Below, they also host events on a regular basis. Coming up on February 24th, Friday, February 24th, they're going to have an event. It's a journey to connect with your spirit animal. So that's going to be a wonderful opportunity to learn, I'm sure, about your own spirit animal, but also the concept and idea behind spirit animals or spirit totems and what they kind of mean and what they can do for you along your path, your journey, all those kind of different things. So go to our website, energieslovepodcast.com. If you click on the sponsors tab, you'll see a link to As Above, So Below, which will then take you to their Facebook page. Go follow them on Facebook. Go like them. If you are in the area, if you are here locally in Utah, by all means, pop in and say hello. On this episode of the podcast, I sat down with Amanda B. Jones. If you are here in Utah, if you live locally in Utah and you're listening, you've probably seen Amanda on KUTV2 Channel 2 News. She recently just left, actually, and she's no longer on Channel 2 because she was inspired to go out and do more of what her heart, her soul, all those kind of things have led her to. And that has led her to become a certified yoga instructor, as well as instructing and leading meditations. One of the cool things that Amanda's been doing and is actually really popular here locally in Utah is yoga with the sharks. So we have a really cool aquarium here, and you can go to these events and actually do yoga in front of the ginormous shark tank. It's a really neat thing that she has started up, and we talk about it quite a bit in the episode. Amanda was really generous and open to all the different things that we kind of talk about on the podcast, and she shared her experiences, her insights. It was a really, really wonderful opportunity. It's a great interview. Amanda has two events coming up soon. First one is February 18th. They're going to be doing yoga in the rainforest. So that'll be a neat thing to check out if you're interested. And then next month, Amanda will be doing another yoga experiences with the sharks. So go to her website, yogaexperiences.org. Follow her on Facebook. We've got all those links in the show notes. Keep up to date with all the things that she's doing. But for now, you get to sit back and relax and enjoy this wonderful, wonderful episode with Amanda B. Jones on the podcast for the universe. Here we go.
You're listening to the Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is the Love podcast.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is Love podcast.
The podcast for the universe.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Well, good afternoon, Amanda. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast.
Yeah, life is crazy, but things like this are important.
So tell me about your life. Like, if I'm not mistaken, you've left KUTV, right? You've left the news. Now you're doing your own thing and everything like that, right?
Yeah, 10 years in the media and I'm no longer doing that. And for some reason, my ego's okay with that. I think because now it's fulfilled enough to not need that attention, I guess, or that validation of a career, that now I can pursue what my heart wants, which is yoga at the aquarium.
Yeah. Did you feel during your time in the media that because I think all the time people get into whatever they end up doing in life, right? Their job, their career, they kind of happen to find themselves there.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes we luck out and it's our passion and we're really excited about it. Did you have a time period or maybe throughout your career where you got to the point where you're like, I enjoy this and it's beneficial, but there's a part of me that wants to do more, or this isn't fulfilling every aspect of me?
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good insight. I think when I was doing my feature reporting and doing the radio thing where I got to meet everyday people and tell their stories, that was what made me passionate. I could get some information across that maybe the mainstream didn't know about this group of people or this type of person. And that really made me feel like I was contributing to the world. But there's so much more to your job than just meeting someone and telling their story. And, you know, the competition of the news and, you know, the personal toll it takes to, I mean, I had it easy. I always did kind of fun news. My husband, he's a reporter. He does more of the justice and social news. So he really sees a lot of the suffering, kind of like you as a police officer. Mm-hmm. But I just think that whole media environment does kind of make you take on a lot of the world's sorrows. And to want to be able to go beyond just telling someone's story and actually influencing their individual lives, that kind of came towards the end of my career. I was like, oh, I can do more than just get their story out on the TV or the radio or the website. I can actually go into their lives and help them heal themselves if they want it.
So I want to go into, because you're the first person that I've ever spoken to before that was involved in news or in the media or in that business. And especially right now in the state of the world and in our country and everything like that, the media gets a bad rap a lot of times. And I think that sometimes it's warranted, and then I think that other times it's not. But could you speak on, having been in that field and in that arena, what, because I'll give you my personal take on it, okay? I don't watch a lot of news. I don't really like watching the news a lot of
times. It's not healthy to watch a lot of news.
No, because yeah. I feel like a lot of times the information that they're putting out there, I mean, if you just watch news, you sit back and you think that the world's a terrible, horrible place.
Right.
That bad shit's continuing to happen every single day. It doesn't matter where you look, where you live. There's always something terrible going on. And I think very, very differently than that. I don't think that's the case.
Right. Good for you. Yeah. With media, I kind of see it as the public consciousness. Mm-hmm. And what is that reflecting about our public's consciousness? It's not a happy place right now. But then you also look at all of the healing industries that are growing, and yoga's so popular, meditation's so popular, that public consciousness is starting to shift. And you have media outlets like this and Upworthy really striving to show that part of public consciousness. So once, you know, the 24-hour news media catches on, local media catches on, then we're going to see a more accurate reflection of our public consciousness, I feel.
Do you think they will catch on? Like, part of me thinks that it's like a dying breed, like it's something that is going to eventually just stop and exist. Like, we're no longer going to have news in the way, shape, and form that we've had for the past 50 years.
I can see that people are starting to tune out certain media outlets. And I think that's for a good reason. I think that some media outlets have their foot in a group of people who are suffering. And they're the voice for a group of people who are suffering. And the people who aren't buying into that are kind of seeing that as, I don't choose that to be my reflection of my world. Kind of like what you're saying is, mm-hmm. I don't see the world that way, so I'm not going to watch something that I don't agree with. Well, there's a whole lot of people, unfortunately, still. It's like we've suppressed our bad emotions down as a country. And because of this president, I think that a lot of the bad emotions that we've been suppressing are all coming out. And there are certain people who are expressing those emotions out loud now, and certain media outlets who are expressing those emotions out loud. And that's hard to hear for people who want to have an optimistic attitude, a loving attitude. But it's also important to face that suffering that's going on in our country and to help heal it. Now it's all out in the open. As awful as it is, it's all out in the open. So now we have a responsibility or an opportunity to change that public consciousness and to add our voices, our healing voices, our positive voices, our wise voices to that paradigm.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I think that the way I, and like I said, I don't watch a lot of news. In no way, shape, or form am I, do you know what I mean, educated when it comes to the state of news media or anything like that. But it feels to me like when I do tune in and when I do watch and when I do kind of pay attention and to listen, and I do get a lot of information, but the vast majority of it's just all online. And that stuff is always skewed as well, I think. But it feels to me like they're grasping at every last little straw that they can kind of grasp at in order to remain relevant. Like even the way that television works today, right? The vast majority of news, obviously, you're tuning in and you're watching it on television. And television has changed so significantly to where it's no longer, even like 10 years ago, it's different than what it was. Do you know what I mean? People mm-hmm. don't tune into television the same way that they used to.
Yeah, because it's all for instant gratification mm-hmm. now. We've changed the way we consume. It used to be long-form articles and newspapers in the 17, 1800s. Now it's the more bite-sized you can get, that's how you're going to get your news, because the 24-hour news, the 24-hour news stations, the newspapers, the websites, they all want you to click, click, click. So they're going to give you headlines that are stimulating. They're going to give you things you can scan. But the problem with that is you don't get the whole story. You don't get the whole frontline documentary that shows you 360 degrees of an issue. You get one sensational headline. And I think that's the problem with media right now, is they're trying to focus on that instant gratification instead of an actual education. And, you know, it's kind of our fault too, because we don't want to sit there and reading a three-page, you know, referendum. So maybe we need to pay a little bit more attention too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes and where it changes and evolves and adapts. But I definitely think we're at that point, not necessarily like a tipping point, but I definitely feel like we're at that space where things are evolving and changing, obviously. I mean, I think that that's always continually happening, but especially it's almost like it's starting to look to be more noticeable, where it's not something that we just kind of assume is happening and everything's going the same way. I think things are really starting to shift and change and become more noticeable out there.
Yeah, like if you take social media, a lot of people are just tuning out the news and just surfing social media. And that's okay if you fill your feed with a bunch of inspiration and positivity, because then that affects you as a person and you go out in the world and you're full of those things. So I don't think it's bad to say, I'm going to turn the news off. I really don't. I think it's good to be open to hearing people. That deep listening is what our spirit is supposed to do. And that's what how we show deep presence. So if we listen to our neighbor, that can replace all of the news. You just have to hear someone's experience to be able to make an informed decision.
Yeah. Having been out of it now, like how long ago did you leave?
Almost a month.
Yeah. So just barely. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, like, if you're in that space of, like, you know, the process of leaving something like that, especially after being in it for 10 years, like, how has that been?
It was hard for my ego to finally detach from that identity. And I got a taste of that when I had a baby and quit my morning radio gig. I felt identity-less. I got postpartum depression because of that, because I had built my whole identity on, I'm a member of the media, I'm a journalist, blah, blah, blah. But it was neat in those periods of depression where I could get to know who I really was. I found meditation, I had a regular yoga practice, and that really set me up for this amazing other path of healing. So you got to have that destruction in your life to be able to go to the healing path. But it was hard to leave in my mind, but once I actually said, I'm done, the freedom of it was amazing. It was like I wasn't losing 10 years. I was building on what I had created, and the name I had created I could use for a greater good, to bring people together through healing arts like yoga and meditation. So it's really been a really fun month to see how I'm still me and I'm enjoying life even without my title.
Don't you kind of, like, I think there's times too where you kind of question that. You're like, I have a knowingness inside. I am still me, but then there's an aspect of it where I don't feel like I'm me, and I have to learn, you know, maybe like a different dynamic of who I am, because I was so identified with this one aspect of me for so long.
Yeah, I know. That's really hard. And anybody who's had a career really feels attached to it in some way. But I think a regular meditation practice where I personally ask in the beginning of my meditation, who am I? I think that has trained me to see that I am endless. I'm not a job title. I'm not even a mother, a wife, a human. I'm not any one of those things, that I am all of those things and more. So the more I started to identify with my infinite source, the less and less all those titles mattered.
Yeah, it really does. when you can step outside and look at that big picture stuff, then you're like, oh, this isn't really that important.
Yes. When you consider the whole universe was created by a couple of atoms, you're like, okay, I'm not that significant.
Are you originally from Utah?
I'm from Reno, Nevada, and I've grown up here. My dad moved us all out here when I was in second grade. So I've got to grow up in Utah, and I think I'm going to be here for a while.
Yeah, it's a good state.
Yeah, a lot of people are becoming way more open to energy and to healing. I get, I'm lucky enough to get Channel 2 viewers who come to me for meditation and Ayurveda sessions. And that's beautiful to see, because that's generally a population who, you know, struggles with a lot of things, with income, with career choices, career options that are available to them. And to see that they're starting to awaken and know that there's something better out there, that's beautiful. So I feel like my time in the media at least was good for that.
Yeah.
Tapping into that population.
When it comes to like your spirituality, because I think so many times when people go through a process, and maybe you've gone through that process, or I think we're always going through that process, but in the process of expanding your consciousness and moving into different things and ideas and thought processes, do you have anything that you can go back? Because I think we always have a time period too, where we have a re-remembrance of our childhood and our, do you know what I mean? Our life essentially of growing up, where we can recall things that we now take for, not necessarily take for granted, but things that we now have a deeper understanding of. We can go back and realize, oh, I did that when I was a child, or I had that connection, or do you know what I mean? Some aspect of, because as a kid, you know, you're oblivious to it. You're just a kid and growing
yes.
up.
Yes. But then you realize how integral that was in who you are as a mm-hmm. soul. Yeah, that's a really insightful idea. Looking back, and actually it's directly tied to what I'm doing with yoga right now, I was fascinated by the environment. I always had a deep connection with my surroundings. I would wander in the backyard. I really enjoyed the aquariums, the zoos, animals. So that carried on to what I'm doing now, which was I went into an aquarium here in Draper, and it was when I was still a little bit depressed, postpartum depression. I took my baby there to kind of get some peace and tranquility. And in the shark tunnel, I just felt that raw connection once again with the environment, with these creatures. And it gave me a flashback to when I was little and I insisted on having this tiny little plush shark. And we called her Amy Shark, and I had to be, 3 years old. But it just seemed to all fall into place. And I'm like, I need to do yoga here.
So how long have you been doing yoga? That's a cool story, by the way. Like, right. When you can go back and think about, especially when you have memories of being that young,
mm-hmm.
like that stuff. I think all of our memories and all of our experiences are always somewhere in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
But then to try to pull them out and remember, you know.
Well, and then society like puts a whole bunch of stuff in between that,
mm-hmm.
where you lose that. But yeah, so yoga, I've been doing yoga for, since 2012. So not that long in a lot of yoga teacher standards, but the growth I've experienced in those years has been astronomical. I remember when I first started doing it, I was a different person. I was not quite awake yet. I was doing it for physical activity at the 24-hour fitness at the time, not really giving it a whole lot of thought, but I kept going for some reason. And then I took a little break, and then I started doing Bikram yoga. Have you heard of that? Mm-hmm. Really hot yoga, intense yoga. And I did that for about 3 months straight, and that's when I noticed a huge shift in my consciousness. I was in a different marital situation before, and I left that. I had this expanded consciousness where I knew I was beyond that, where I had this whole other option for a life to lead that didn't include that former life. And very shortly after that, I met the love of my life, my current husband, and everything seemed to change when I dedicated all of that time to my practice. And so got married to my husband. Got pregnant and decided that media probably wasn't going to be the most flexible career for when I was a mom. And so I had the crazy idea to enroll in yoga teacher training when I was super pregnant and ended up getting my certificate when I was 8 months pregnant.
Oh, that's a great time to go through yoga certification, right?
I was very connected to creation at the time. And then I was still teaching prenatal yoga lessons up until I gave birth. And then shortly after, I was teaching postnatal. So I was all throughout the course of my pregnancy, the birth and postpartum, I was helping other moms along that path as well. So it was kind of this community of other moms. It was kind of neat. And that spurred a whole other string of yoga entrepreneurship. And that's where I am today.
So I want to pick apart yoga, not like in a judgmental way, but specifically in regards to you. I think a lot of times people, like you said, in the beginning, you're going to the 24-hour fitness and do you know what I mean? I want to look good in my yoga pants. And it's a whole aspect. And there's almost like a subculture. I wouldn't even say necessarily. It almost seems like the subculture of yoga is the more deeper spiritual connection. And the bigger culture of yoga that exists right now is that aspect of, do you know what I mean? It's like it's a class that you go take it when you go to your gym. And it's
100%.
That whole aspect of it. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. But what about... because it brings people to that space of yoga. So could you pull out some things, or do you remember some very specific, like how do you go from that to the deeper spiritual connection? Do you know what I mean? Like were there moments in class that you remember experiencing something or feeling something deeper?
Yeah. Well, when I was at the 24-hour fitness, I didn't really allow myself to go deeper. I mean, I had an amazing instructor looking back who was, you know, talking about chakras, and I just wasn't hearing that, I guess, because my intention was to go there for fitness. Mm-hmm. And but with the Bikram, I started going and I started feeling like part of a community, and it was really hard. And to keep showing up there took a lot of dedication. And so I think that dedication where I was honoring myself and showing up for this, that kind of made me more open to the spiritual aspects, because I remember just, I was more aware. I was more aware. I don't know if it was the kind of yoga, because it was so brutal that it almost strips away who you thought you were. It's kind of hard to pinpoint that moment, though. I just know that with 3 months of dedication, that's when I felt like I was a different person.
So think about in the most intense aspect when you're, you know, your body is being pushed to that physical, like the limits that you think that your body can go to. And then you go a little bit further and you go a little bit further. I think one of the benefits of yoga is in those spaces when you are being pushed so hard, your brain almost can't process anything else. So you don't have the opportunity to think about your to-do list or what you're going to cook for dinner or anything like that. You really just have the opportunity to focus on the pain and the position that you're in and being in that space. And I think when you do that, obviously yoga is a meditation, right? They're interchangeable with one another, I think. But I think that's one of the really beneficial aspects, is it forces you into a very singular meditation, and it's pain a lot of times, but then it allows all those other aspects of your brain to light up, all the subconscious aspects of your brain.
That is so insightful. Yes, that's exactly what was happening, because now that you say that, when I was doing the gentle flow or whatever I was doing at 24-hour fitness compared to the really hardcore, you know, the nature of Bikram, which is very powerful and exhausting. I mean, you have to exhaust yourself in this society to feel any peace. Mm-hmm. So perhaps that's what I was doing. I was exhausting myself so much that my brain was finally still, that I finally felt that quietude enough to see the world how it is without all my stories and past and future filters on it.
Well, think back to your thought processes during those times, right? Like, there's been times when I've gone through really, really strenuous physical activity designed to break you down. And in that space, your brain literally kind of can't process anything else. It can only process what's right in front of you and the thing that you're working on, and being in that pain and just surviving through that pain. And it's that fun game that you get to play with your brain where you think, I can't go any further, I can't go anymore, I can't hold this pose, or I can't do whatever the case may be. And then you go a little bit further, and you go a little bit further. And it's so rewarding, and the gratification that you get from those experiences. But I think that there's a deeper aspect of it, to where there's this subconscious thing that happens in those spaces where your brain does get to, first off, relax. Because we think about a brain, I think it's just this big, ginormous supercomputer that's running all the time. And so you get to relax your brain, which then frees up all that creativity and all those deeper connections, I think, to the universe and to energy and everything else.
Yes. And I love the teachers, the yoga teachers, who really focus on centering you mm-hmm. and who coach you through breathing, because breathing is a way to connect to the present moment. It's such a simple concept, yet you don't understand that unless you have a coach. And who coach you, yoga teachers who coach you to drop competition, because that's something we all do in a yoga class. Look at our neighbors, look at, are we doing the pose correctly? If there's a good yoga teacher telling you, reminding you, deconditioning you to think that way, you're going to leave that yoga class being like, wow, there's another way to think. There's another way to talk to myself. And I think it's those yoga teachers who can really change a student's experience from going there purely for fitness into having a deeper connection with their inner self. And those are the teachers I look to, you know, grow my capabilities as a teacher.
So when did you find meditation? Was it just all in that same kind of conjunction of yoga and everything like that?
Yeah, I learned it during the yoga teacher training, but then I really got to the root of it when I was depressed, because yoga alone was not pulling me out of that funk. And so I reread the Yoga Sutras, which they give you in the yoga teacher training. And I really...
Explain what that is real quick so people
yoga
out there.
Sutras came around 500, 300 BCE. And it's a sage named Patanjali. He kind of took a little bit of Hinduism, a little bit of Buddhism, all of it from the Vedas, which came about 3,000 years ago. And he made his own, rule book for how you should live life in order to have a still, quiet mind. And so he wrote these very easy to follow guidelines that a lot of yoga teachers harmonize with, and they teach those yoga sutras, and they have a very specific method for meditation, which I gravitated to. And it's like I almost saw it for the first time when I read it in a place of suffering, and it was dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. And yes, I learned this during yoga teacher training, but it was almost like revealed to me how to implement that into a meditation practice. And so dharana is focus. I chose to focus on my breath. And when you focus on your breath, you move to dhyana, which is a state of observing your thoughts, or meditation. And when you meditate constantly, you're going to experience that samadhi, connection, that oneness, that knowing that your soul is connected to the universe. And so the more you do dharana, dhyana, you'll feel samadhi. And so that just became my template for taking care of myself. And I healed the depression. It took about a year, but that's when I really connected with meditation and said, I need to share this with people.
Did you have anything else like throughout your life that was kind of in this same realm of spirituality and energy and all those kind of things? Or was it really...
You know, my mom's a life coach, but we always said, you know, you're doing your woo-woo stuff, Mom. We totally wrote it off. I wish I would have taken more advantage of that. But honestly, I was in a state of confusion and egocentric living until I went to that Bikram class. I am convinced I didn't have much spirituality in my life. Grew up LDS, and that didn't do much to help me connect with my inner self. So I can't say that I've had much experience with spirituality until fairly recently. If you think about when I did Bikram, that was maybe 7 years ago, 6 years ago. So I have not been my most effective, happy self for that long, really.
Do you feel like, because I think about this, okay, if you look at your life that way, where maybe you haven't been the fullest, happiest that you could be, and you've been in that, stuck in that kind of egocentric space and things like that, I think we're always right where we're supposed to be. And I think that as soon as we understand something, so as soon as we kind of come to a place where we feel like we've really grasped a concept or understand some experience that we've gone through in life, or maybe something that was, you know, negative or whatever the case may be, when we really feel like we've made peace, that's a good way to describe it, to made peace with something, then the universe flips it. So then we get the opportunity to see another aspect and another angle and another side to that situation or to that experience or even to that concept. And so, do you know what I mean? If you look back at your life and the things that you've gone through and experienced, and because I think that a lot of times too, people, they get frustrated when they kind of have this spiritual awakening where, why didn't, you know, this happen earlier in my life, or why didn't I have the opportunity? You know, I should have been living this way my whole life or something like that, just this deeper connection that they have. But like I said, I think we're always in that space where we need to be, and we're always headed in this in the right direction. But do you have, gosh, I feel like I'm rambling here, but
no, it's so insightful what you're getting at. It's looking back at your life and to see those experiences where you felt like you weren't awake and how they actually have made you a more whole person. And looking back, as a healer now, or a, you know, a potential healer, I hope I can heal people, but I am so grateful for the depression. Like the suicidal days where I thought that I just, everyone would be better without me. I am so grateful for that, because I have so much empathy now for, I've had many clients who come to me who said they had a bottle of pills in their hands, and I know what that feels like. So I would not be I would not be qualified enough to help them if I hadn't gone through something like that. And even on a smaller scale, I mean, participating in the rat race and understanding what it feels like to be stressed out and to be overextended and to be in a relationship that's not serving either one of you, to know what that feels like to take that scenario and actually be able to make it better. That whole journey is what I can inspire people with and say, hey, I did it. And I wasn't even awake yet. I was just getting there. I can do it. You can do it. That kind of experience for sure, definitely, was for a reason.
You said your mom's a life coach?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is.
Like what type of stuff does she incorporate? Like when she works with people and things like that? I mean, I'm curious because I think it's interesting that you're kind of at this space in your life now where you're kind of coming into all of these different things and whatnot. And my guess is that there's a lot of correlation and parallels between you and your mom, probably.
I bet she does a lot of intuitive coaching with her clients, where I definitely feel that intuition coming out. I always tell people it's not really me, it's just coming through me. So I can listen to a person for a few minutes and kind of pick up on what I'm feeling from them and then kind of give them some feedback. That's what my mom does. She's very intuitive. She's also amazing at crisis coaching. If someone's coming to her at their darkest hour or relationship got really nasty, she can help pull them out of that or help them piece it together or process that. And I think that I've been really good in my life at dealing with crisis, just, I don't know, call it type A or just the refusal to fail. But I think I can definitely get part of that from her.
How do you feel like that's going to, like, I have all these questions that are popping in my head. This is one of the fun things about doing the podcast, but it's also one of the challenging things is it's like,
you're
I have
a very
so many
intuitive interviewer. It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. It's frustrating at times, but, I guess we'll make it simple. If you could look at your spirituality, or if you look at the journey that you've been on over the last, whatever, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, looking back, can you see the synchronistic events that took place that led you to where you're at now?
Mm-hmm. I love that you use synchronistic, because it is all a perfect coincidence, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest synchronicities is sharing a desk with the man who would become my husband. And at Channel 2, we shared a desk, and I just am flabbergasted that we shared a desk, because we ended up just falling in such love, but growing a friendship and, you know, just taking that first step and going on a date, because Chris, he has been my biggest cheerleader for following this path. I mean, I've never had anyone that supportive in my life saying, Yes, go get a yoga teacher training. Yes, you need to pursue meditation. Yes, go on this retreat for 4 days. I'll take care of our 2-year-old. He has been really key in this process. And I feel like everyone who makes that leap from, you know, old life to new life or whatever you want to call it, needs that support person who says, you know, you can do this.
Yeah, definitely helps. It's hard when you're in opposition to somebody or into your life and things like that. That definitely is challenging. Tell me about the yoga with the sharks, because you've only done one so far, if I'm not mistaken, because you just barely started doing
right.
it. And when I saw that stuff pop up, I've never been to the aquarium here. So describe that first for people, so then they have an idea of what the heck that is.
Okay. Well, what inspired me was being in the shark tunnel underwater. I mean, it is almost not possible to think when you're in awe of this environment. And that tranquility is what inspired me to start this event, Yoga with the Sharks, because I wanted other people to feel that. And during the day-to-day of the aquarium, like, it's too loud. There are kids shouting, and you can't really get that tranquil while you're, you know, in the school, after school hours. But when you organize an event where people can come and it's quiet and you actually have a experience that makes you more aware of this beautiful environment, that's what my new focus is yoga and meditation. They can take the noise out of your brain so that you're actually seeing what's around you. And that's why I rebranded as Yoga Experiences, because I want people to experience their environment in a more aware fashion so they can actually connect with it. So people who were going to the aquarium just for fun, an attraction, are now going to the aquarium to connect with themselves and therefore connect to these animals, connect to the water, reconnect to this environment, this symbiotic relationship that we have. And who knows if they go home and say, you know, I probably should recycle or use a little less water, or even just say, oh, I should go do that again. That felt really good. That would make me feel satisfied.
What are some of the things that you've seen so far in the space of like working with people and things like that with yoga? Do you know what I mean? Because it's easy to speak on the ways that it's changed your life and the things that, you know, you've gone through and experienced. But what are some of the things that you've seen other people gain from it, I guess?
Well, I can think of one of my clients, and she's absolutely amazing. And her friends have texted me saying, what did you do to our friend? She is a completely different person. And that caught me so off guard, because I think, you know, part of me always feels like an imposter, you know, like, oh, I can't do that much good. We always have that light and dark within us. But hearing those kinds of affirmations, that's really cool, because to see someone in my office talking to me and then, you know, I can see them meditate and they're doing great. But to hear that they're taking that outside of a session, that's inspiring me. Because I was doing the whole Facebook rant political thing for a while and, you know, debating people. And I realized that's not how to connect to people. They need to start way, way before we get on Facebook, which is when they wake up in the morning, do they feel like a good person or do they feel like a bad person? And if I can help people feel like a good person, that's what's going to come to the table in life. That's what our society is going to grow into. So I decided to get off Facebook, the Facebook political rants, and refocus on individual clients.
Like as your spiritual journey evolves and grows, are there other things that you've kind of been attracted to and other things that you've kind of, do you know what I mean, been drawn to in regards to, like, tell me, if you practice meditation, undoubtedly you get to a point where you're experiencing something that you can't explain. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have something like that that you could?
Yeah. I had a teacher at a Deepak Chopra retreat recently, and he said, you know, you can meditate once a week, but you're not going to get the same benefits as if you meditate twice a day. So when you meditate twice a day, which I've been trying to do diligently, of course, it's never perfect. There's some 7-minute meditations or some no meditations. I'm not going to lie. But when I do the two sessions, 10 minutes at 8 a.m., 10 minutes at 4 p.m., my day is great. And not just because amazing things are happening, although that has happened. I've gotten 3 checks in one day for some reason. But because I have more control over how I react. And when I react in a peaceful manner, my world is harmonious. So that's one thing. I mean, it's not so magical, but it definitely enhances my life experience. And then another thing that's come up is a fascination with the cosmos. It's that kind of knowing that you're made of that, that you're an event that the universe is creating right now, and that any thought you have, that's atomic energy that can actually create a reality. And some scientists believe that it does create a reality in an alternate universe. And that's been another path, because if people think this energy stuff is just, you know, what I used to think, woo-woo stuff, but it's been studied by scientists. And the scientists that you see, like Einstein, I mean, the more they find out, the more they prove, the more awe they have at the possibilities. And so the more I get into this meditative space, the more in awe I am of the possibilities that I am the universe.
Yeah.
And then Ayurveda. Ayurveda is probably the final thing that I've been passionate about. It's kind of the last piece of the puzzle in living a harmonious lifestyle for me, because it covers the food, the kind of lifestyle you should lead. You know, yoga's one thing, meditation's another, but Ayurveda kind of incorporates the supplements, the food, the workouts, and the kind of life you should create for yourself. So I feel like with those three elements, that's where I find harmony.
I think it's a good base.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good base. You talked about that concept and idea that, you know, if you create something in your mind, or if you have a thought that maybe it does somehow magically appear in some other realm or some other dimension or some other space. I love that idea. Like, I've gone, you know, down the deep rabbit hole in my own head of thinking, like, it's easy to think about all the things that we, so somebody writes a book, right? They write a fiction book about something, and they've created castles or dragons or whatever these, you know, fantasy type things that exist in this book. I think it's fascinating to think, did they then create that in some other dimension? Or when they were writing the book and the idea for those things came to them, were they connected to some other dimension or some other space? And, you know, that's where they drew the inspiration from.
That one.
That one kind of makes more sense, yeah. Right? Sometimes. And I think that, because for me, in my spiritual journey and everything that I kind of experienced and went through, I got to a certain point because I would question everything, right? I wanted to have more kind of proof or definitive answers or kind of more understanding of things, like, you know, start learning about chakras and you start learning about energy healing and all these different things that exist out there. And I'm like, oh, that sounds great, but I need proof. I need some sort of substance behind it. And then I had some experiences and I had some things that I could draw upon to kind of help in that space. But eventually I got to a point where I came to this place of like, there's enough infinite space out there that anything's possible. So your reality, the way that you view life and the way that you move through life and the way that you see things is real to you. But then if you try to explain something to me, even if we took an inanimate object, if we were to place a cup on the table in front of us, you're going to be looking at it from a different angle than I'm looking at it. And your experience with cups is going to be different than my experience with cups. So I might describe it differently and you might describe it differently, but they're both true to us, right? So I think
I think it's
silly to think that even when people, you know, we might hear a concept or an idea, or somebody might, you know, talk about something, well, that guy's clearly crazy, or they're out there way, way, way beyond any sense of reality. I think that there's enough space that all of those crazy concepts and ideas can be true and are true because they're true to that individual and true to that person. And also, I think that because there is enough space, so I think, and we'll get completely off track here, but I think as soon as you have a thought, if I were to imagine another planet, I think one of two things, either my energy is anywhere and everywhere and connected to everything. So if I imagine a planet, I can visualize it in my head. I can see it. I can go from seeing it like, you know, like if I was looking at it and viewing it from outer space and then zooming into the planet and landing there and seeing all the different things, I can do all of those things in my head instantaneously. Is my energy in that space somewhere out there in the universe where I'm just connected to that? or did I suddenly create that planet?
Ooh.
And I think that either or, do you know what I mean? I don't think there necessarily has to be a wrong or a right. But the cool thing is, as I was explaining that, you suddenly think about a planet. You suddenly kind of visualize something in your head.
Yes.
The people that are listening or who will listen to the podcast are going to be doing the same thing. And I think that there's more than enough space for all of those planets to suddenly be real. Or there's that many planets out there that we can all connect to and see and tap into.
Absolutely. Well, if you think of the molecules that are in our body, those were created in the Big Bang. If you believe the theory that matter cannot be destroyed, they were in Jesus's body, Buddha's body, that we all have pieces of each other. And even when we talk, we're exchanging atoms like at hundreds of thousands of rates. Our bodies are always, Deepak Chopra, who's a scientist, that's why I admire his spirituality. He says, we are a bunch of atoms hanging on to, no, we're a colony of bacteria and molecules hanging on to a couple of human atoms. And it's so true because we are a verb more than a noun. We're infinite, you know, we're not the same makeup of cells today as we're going to be tomorrow. So the fact that we can connect with an image in our mind, I mean, that could very well be where our molecules went. You know, we just sent them there, or that that's where they've been. Have you done virtual reality before?
I haven't yet. I actually have a good friend of mine, this buddy of mine that I grew up with. We're like best friends, and he works, I can't remember the name of the company, and he's going to kill me now, but they're here locally in Utah. And they, oh my goodness, I'm so mad I can't remember it. Something with a V.
Edit it in.
but no, I haven't, but I want to. And he creates all of those, like the big ones where you'll walk through the whatever they've created and stuff like that. So not necessarily the in-home VR, but the,
yes,
like the big stuff. And the Void, maybe, he's going to kill me.
Yes, yes. Well, I feel like it's the same thing as what you're saying, is if you imagine a place and then it kind of stirs up some emotions, maybe some wonder and awe. I think that our society has been built to exclude wonder and awe and childlikeness, which are wonderful, wonderful things. That's what makes life worth living, right? Experiencing something for the first time and just having that awe and respect. That's what I want to do with yoga experiences, is put that awe back in people's lives so that they can see that they're connected to sharks and starfish and, you know, yoga in the rainforest, to toucans and treetops. But with virtual reality, it's kind of the same thing. Like, I did one where I was diving with sharks last night. Of course, sharks, obsessed.
And you had to have been, you got the sharks your power animal, or...
It has to be. Yeah, yeah. I have to look up the whole totem scenario. But being, quote, underwater and just watching these animals, I felt so connected to them. And I was like, why is that? Why can I feel so connected to them? And it's your theory of... You know, either that's the world I create where I am a shark mermaid or something, yeah, or that I am one of them in some respect.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, because I love going off in all of these spaces and in conversation, that's one of the fun things about the podcast, is we can just talk about all these crazy things.
I love
things.
This.
But then I also, you know, just in my own head, because this is a lot of the shit that I think about all the time and that I process and that I kind of just go through in my head as I'm driving and all these kind of things. And there's times too where I get overwhelmed in it, where it becomes too big, or it becomes too, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of times too where I question, you know, so I believe all of this infinite stuff and the universe is never ending. And I mean, the reason it's the Energy is Love podcast is because I believe that the energy that connects everybody, it vibrates at such this high vibration that it's the vibration of love and the strength of love. And do you know what I mean? It's just really easy for me to kind of dumb it down. Well, that makes sense to me, that the energy that is, that connects us all, that the whole big spin of everything is just simply love.
And well said.
Well, you know, I think that when I do get lost out there in the space of pondering all of these different things, because I absolutely love it, but then at the end of the day, I have to remind myself that I am living this human experience. I'm just this guy, right? And there's rhyme and reason to this experience. And so I kind of have to bring it back to, here and to this moment and to Earth and my human body and all these different things. Because I think that there's very much specific, like I said, rhyme and reason to why we are here now experiencing this experience as humans. And do you know what I mean? I don't Absolutely. Think that it should be. Sometimes I think in the spiritual community or when people get into that stuff, I think a lot of times they want to distance themselves more and more from their real human life. Experience.
Yes.
And they want to dance in the clouds and they want to, you know, just focus on all the love and light and rainbows and unicorns and fairies and all those wonderful things. And I think we have to remind ourselves all that stuff's great. And I believe all that stuff exists. But at the end of the day, I still am here on one level, in one sense, even though my energy may be infinitely in a number of other places and times, but I still have a part of it here that I need to focus on and kind of stay grounded in and connect with. And
yeah, well, having a human body is a wonderful opportunity for our universal soul or our inner self, because it can allow us to have these connections, these thoughts, it can help us create things that maybe we wouldn't have experienced if we'd never got a body. So I always like to remember that when I start thinking about the cosmos and, oh, my life is an illusion, I don't want to deal with it, that my inner self is choosing these experiences, and I am not honoring myself for wanting to check out or, you know, glossing over them, that I need to embrace these human experiences and be grateful for the experience that I'm allowing my inner self to have. And that's, you know, I've dedicated this year to bliss, because I can't say that I've ever had a year that's been blissful. So I'm like, let's see what that feels like. And I'm kind of listening to my inner self. Okay, inner self, you have this body. What would you do with it? And it's like, I want to ride a horse. You've always loved horses. Let's ride a horse. So I rented a horse that I get to see once a week. The yoga with the sharks. I've always wanted to, you know, do something with marine life. So I'm just kind of letting that inner soul guide me. What do you want this human body to do for you? And that's been a really fun way to experience life while still being kind of grounded in humanity.
I think that's really neat. I think that's a good concept and idea of, we have this higher consciousness, this, you know, our inner self, our soul, our spirit, whatever we want to call it, that is kind of a passenger in sense with this, when this, with this human experience. And I love that idea in that way that you described. It's kind of asking, what do you want me to do with this human body, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're the little tiny robot inside of me that's kind of stuck in a sense while we're here. What should we be doing during this time period? What's going to bring you joy? What's going to bring you happiness? And I think because that innerness and that little part of us that is our soul and our spirit is so connected to intuition and so connected to the universe. And I think that the universe is always perpetually moving us into a space of happiness and joy.
Yes.
That they're very, very much going to know what we should be doing. We just have to listen.
And that's,
I want to challenge you, though, because you said this is my year of bliss, right? And I've never experienced a year that's been completely blissful. Well, it takes practice. So don't be hard on yourself. Think of it in this way, where I, you know, that's a wonderful affirmation. That's a wonderful thing to kind of put out there and to ask the universe for. But because you've never experienced one, you're going to have to practice it. It's going to take practice. So even when it seems like, oh, I had this year of bliss and I completely screwed up and we're 4 months in and it's just miserable, remember that it's a practice and just dedicate yourself to the practice of that, as opposed to, you know, all or nothing where, well, I failed, something else again, here we go. People do that all the time with, you know, everything. We want to start something new, whether it's an exercise routine or even a meditation practice, and we do really, really good for a week and then we mess up and then we quit. But if we just remind ourselves the practice of it all, it's just the opportunity to continue practicing. And so I think a year of bliss is wonderful. And I think that's a wonderful thing to practice.
Well, that's wonderful advice. I mean, it is about rewiring how you talk about desire and how you think desire can be manifested, because I'm pretty new to the whole law of attraction thing. And that's kind of something that resonated with me at the last retreat I did with Deepak Chopra, where I actually got it spiritually, not just intellectually. And so I am trying to practice that. So thank you for that advice to keep it up if I get discouraged.
Yeah,
thank you.
Just the practice of it. I think when it comes down to anything, it's really just the practice of life, and we get the opportunity to keep practicing it. I had another thought too that popped in my head and now it's gone. I don't remember what it was. Let's do this. Let's think about your connection with sharks, right? You told the story of being a little girl back in the day and you had a little stuffed shark. And now you get to do this wonderful thing where you do yoga with sharks and the connection and the correlation and everything like that. Like, take a moment if you want, or maybe you have, or even if just off the top of your head, what do you think would be not your physical connection or correlation or love or passion of sharks, right? But the deeper meaning, like if you were to read yourself right now, what would be, why would shark be your animal totem?
The primeval nature of them. Like, they've been around 40 million years or something like that, longer than a lot of species, and they're still around. And part of the DNA within us is in them. It's that ancient script that started when life began. And so to have a connection to millions and millions of years ago, that creates something in my gut that gives me some huge sense of who I am. And it's really odd, and it's a more of a feeling than words, but a great respect for life and how we got here.
I think they're a very strong, powerful animal, obviously. Like, if you think about sharks, they're kind of on top of the food chain in regards to the places that they live and the things that they do. And so my guess is that I think anytime you have an animal that you feel connected with, or that you kind of feel that bond, whether you want to think of it, like you said, maybe I was a mermaid shark or something like that in some other space. But I think when you can think about the qualities that they represent, and granted, they're the qualities that we place upon them as humans, right?
That's so true.
Because, like, we think about a shark. I just described a shark being strong. And on the sharks wake up and they're not sitting there thinking, I'm the top of the food chain and I get to go out and be strong today. They're just swimming around eating. They're just doing what they need to do to survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But whatever we place upon them as humans from our experiences and from our understanding, I think there's a reason behind that.
Yeah.
And so then you try to embrace those qualities.
Well, that's right. Like, I definitely get a sense of fear as well that comes up. But I've noticed that's a knee-jerk reaction. Like with the virtual reality shark experience, I threw off the eye goggles the first time. I was like, the second I saw a shark below or behind me where I couldn't control it, That's when I said no. But then when I surrendered that fear and became open to the experience that they're not going to hurt me, that I get to just bask in their energy, that's when it was a amazing experience in that virtual reality. That's where I felt relaxed and just enjoyed it. So I think getting over these qualities that we place on them as humans is very important, because that's how you see the world. Are you going to let your conditioning influence your relationship with this animal? That's what I had to kind of get over. So yeah, definitely that fear.
And I think fear is a good one too. Even if, do you know what I mean? Because I think a lot of times when people have animals that they feel connected with, and some people go way overboard and this is my spirit animal, and I've got my t-shirt, and I've got all my little totems on my nightstand, and do you know what I mean? That's fine. I have no issue or qualms with that. I've got plenty of animals that, you know, decorate our shelves at home and things like that. But I think we also have to remind ourselves that there's always going to be some connection or correlation, and then it gets to shift and change. So you're going to draw strength and inspiration from a shark, right? But then at the same time, I think you brought up fear. I think it's a really good reminder too, to face your fears and look at your fears in a different light and realize that sometimes those fears, like you just described in that VR experience, are kind of unfounded. And if you can just get past that knee-jerk reaction and just move forward, then that's going to help a lot. Do you know what I mean?
That is so, you perfectly said that, because I had to surrender. I had to become the most vulnerable I've ever been to do that virtual reality experience. I had to completely accept the fact that I might die. I mean, it was fake, but that was the whole process there. And I think that was really healthy, that I was like, where's this fear coming from? Is it a fear that I won't have control, which is a fear of mine that I need to get over? Is it a fear that I might die, which is you know, I need to get over that. So all of these processes with sharks, they're helping me heal in some really interesting ways.
Yeah, I think they do. That's the cool part. Do you know what I mean? When you have some connection and correlation with an animal or something like that that pops up. I've had weird ones. I used to have, there was a time period when in my meditation practice, I would be meditating and super good space. I'd get to this really like wonderful spot in meditation.
Yeah.
And then a fly would land on me. And you'd play that game back and forth where you're like, okay, I can force my way through this. Mm-hmm. I can, do you know what I mean? I'm connected enough and I'm an experienced meditator. I can handle this. And the fly's not going to take me out of the space that I'm in. And I would go back and forth and, you know, undoubtedly I'd eventually have to swipe the fly off my face and brush it away and then get back to a happy space in my meditation. And the damn fly would come land on my head again. And this happened like consistently over like the span of like 2 weeks where I'd be meditating and I'd be really in a good spot and then a fly would come.
Oh, wow.
And just driving me nuts. And we were visiting with one of our friends and they mentioned, well, did you ever take a look and see what the properties of a fly was in regards to like the realm of spirit animals and totems and things like that?
What was it?
I don't remember because it was a while ago.
Did it surprise you?
It did surprise me and it had great connection and correlation for where I was kind of at in life right then. Do you know what I mean?
What a love letter from the universe.
Yeah,
huh?
It was really neat, you know, and it was a great reminder. And now I have a, you know, I struggle sometimes when you have to kill a fly and then there's other times I just smash them. I don't care how many kill flies, but it's just a funny thing that
you had some odd connection with a fly.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, the fly had to pop in. And because like I said, I always think we're, you know, exactly where we're supposed to be. So I'm supposed to have this experience with a fly. And the fly is supposed to have the experience with me as well. Even, you know, it may have been the same fly. It could have been a different fly.
Perspective, yes.
So there's something that the fly is gaining and getting from me as well. And then I have to go through the process of challenging my meditation and those experiences, which then later on down the road helped me let go more in meditation, right?
Wow.
And learn more and things like that. But I mean, all that stuff, just those interconnected part. I asked you earlier about synchronicities in life and things like that. I think so many times when we, because it's really easy to look back. It's really easy to go back and think about all the little things that happened and we can see them now with hindsight, how they lined up and now we're here where we're supposed to be and all that kind of stuff. Those synchronistic events happen, I think, every single day, all the time, continually on a regular basis. Do you know what I mean? And so we just have to bring awareness to it, you know, kind of in that space of awe and gratitude and awareness and appreciation. And then it's nice to sit back in hindsight and see how they all connected and worked and everything. But
gosh, that you just blew my mind. It's so true. I mean, I was kind of replaying my day so far. It's like, yeah, from the moment you wake up, you have choices, and those choices create some sort of different reality.
And then do we have choices when we wake up? I think we tell ourselves that we do sometimes. Sometimes I like to think, so I think about all of these wonderful things, right? And then sometimes I think that that we don't have choices, that it's all predetermined, or what we're doing right now doesn't really matter.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. That, so that's how you're feeling right now?
Not necessarily how I'm feeling right now. But that's how you've... But I, you know, I mean, that's kind of a challenging, opposing viewpoint in regards to my own head where I think what I do, so me, just myself individually, have massive importance in the scheme of the universe where the decisions and the choices and the way that I move through life and live my life affect the universe as a whole. I believe that. And I think that that goes for everybody. I think that everybody has that same capacity and that same power. And, but then at the same time, I like to challenge it. I like to think, well, maybe I'm not that important. Maybe what I do doesn't really matter. You know, the universe is just kind of like, have we checked in with Craig lately? What's he up to? Oh, we forgot. We haven't talked to him in 6 months. And then they come and check in. They're like, oh, he's way off track. We're going to leave him alone because we don't know what the hell he's up to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I think that's so healthy. I love that you, and that's why you have such a very robust view and the spirituality that you have is very insightful. That's good to question things. I like to think that we have more control over our destiny. Definitely the synchronicities exist, but part of me really finds truth in that we create that path and that the synchronicities are almost signs that we're fulfilling that path that we're supposed to be on, that our inner soul is wanting that experience of, so that, you know, when you have a thought and it feels good, that's the right path. When you have a thought and it feels scary or stressful or bad, that's probably not the path you want to be on to be your happiest self. So when you go for like the urges, like I'm a big planner. I can plan out every outcome of every scenario and how to avoid suffering.
There's another word for that, or another label for that. It's control freak. But go ahead.
Oh, there we go. My husband would probably say that one. But being able to surrender to my urges, mm-hmm. that's something that I learned to ignore. You know, having this human experience is, don't go with your urges, go with what you need to do to avoid suffering. But the urges, those have led me to these kinds of experiences, like yoga with the sharks, the urge to go do yoga around marine life. That is weird in societal terms, but it was something I wanted to do. And I didn't even want to do it for money or anything, but it turned out to be one of the most successful things I've ever done in my career. So following the urges definitely creates happiness in my life. So that makes me think that I have control over my destiny, that the universe has given me the power to think thoughts and therefore create objects and create realities. So that's where I'm feeling right now. Yeah.
Have you ever swam with sharks before?
I have, but I'm not proud of it because it was in South Africa and it was the cage diving with great white sharks and they were chumming the water and getting them kind of riled up. So I feel like that played more into the idea we have as a culture of sharks are scary and face your fears in a more egocentric way. But it was neat. It was neat.
Have you spent a lot of time at the ocean before?
I'm really attracted to water. Mm-hmm. I have to be by water often. So that's why I go to the aquarium a lot.
But I know we're kind of stuck here in Utah.
We are. Yeah, I'm telling my husband, we need to get a tiny home in San Diego. I can just be here and there.
So we go to California, not as often as I'd like, but we've gone quite often. And, you know, we'll spend days at the beach, just hanging out on the beach and things like that. And when you go into the water, I think that there's times, for me personally, there's times where you feel something in the water, right? There's something that you just feel. And I think big predators have a different feel than regular animals do. And I don't know, you know, we could probably sit and dissect and try to understand and whatnot. But I think that their energy that they carry is very, very different than like a deer or, do you know what I mean? Or just a regular fish or even like the seals. Like we'd see seals all the time be out there in the water and seals would come swimming by and they feel differently. But then I didn't see sharks. I mean, I've seen sharks before in the distance and things like that.
Wow.
But there's always a feeling. And then we went to Yellowstone this last year. And we were in Yellowstone for like a week and had a really good time. And we saw bears and all the good stuff, right?
Wow.
But the bears that we saw were like the nice, cool, cuddly black bears or little brown bears. And there's a feeling when you see a grizzly bear that is just different. And it's not because they look different or move different. I think their energy is vastly different. There's just something about them where there's like an electricity, a static thing in the air that exists. And I think, you know, sharks, obviously, my guess would have the same thing because there were times in the ocean where you felt something or where I felt something and couldn't confirm it. I didn't see anything, but there was just a different feeling. So I was wondering if you had spent a lot of time in the water or had
Well, I could feel that as you were describing it, like what I would feel around them. And, you know, I talked about that kind of knee-jerk fear, but that could possibly be instinctual
mm-hmm.
because, I mean, we can be on the top of the food chain, but that depends on the situation. If you're unprotected and, I mean, we could easily be the prey in that situation. So that brings me back to that primordial kind of fear of maybe this is written in our DNA.
It could totally be instinctual. It could be that evolutionary aspect of us that's still there that has this radar that can sense predators, right? Because you know what I mean? Especially if you're in the ocean, it almost doesn't matter what you take into the ocean. You're screwed with a great white.
Yeah.
And I think that's a wonderful thought. I hadn't thought about that.
Interesting.
It's not necessarily my wonderful ability to connect with energy and sense things. It may just be that ingrained part of evolutionary, you know, fight or flight that kind of goes off when they come into your area.
Yeah. And to take that feeling, that different energy, and still respect them and let them have domain over their oceans and let them do their thing where they pick out the sick and the weak so that marine life can thrive. If we have the respect for them, even out of, in despite of that fear, I think that's a healthier relationship than let's kill them all, yeah. You know? So hopefully with being around them a little bit more, people doing yoga with them can maybe change their perspective a little bit. Okay, yeah, we might be a little afraid. We don't have to swim with them, but maybe we can have some awe surrounding them.
Well, that whole thing of just appreciation for life in general. Amanda, thank you so much.
Oh my goodness, I could talk to you all day. Thank you for teaching me so much.
Well, thank you for sharing everything. I think you're doing wonderful stuff. Give everybody your information so they have a way to contact you as far as online and everything like that.
Yes, I'm just at Yoga Experiences on Instagram and yogaexperiences.org online.
Excellent.
Thank you so much, Craig. You are very wise, and thank you for helping me process a few things along the way.
When's the next Yoga with the Sharks?
That will be March 7th at the Living Planet Aquarium, and we're also trying out Rainforest Yoga February 18th, Saturday morning yoga.
Excellent.
Nice. Well, thank you so much. Namaste.
Everybody go out and have a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful day.
When you have a thought and it feels good, that's the right path. We're a colony of bacteria and molecules hanging on to a couple of human atoms. Any thought you have, that's atomic energy that can actually create a reality. Having a human body is a wonderful opportunity for our universal soul or our inner self.